Radio. Thank you for tuning in. It's good to have you with us as we continue to explore further and go deeper into the mysteries of this world and beyond. Take a good look around our website for radio, TV commentary, film, news, articles, and research material on many of the things that we find interesting and of importance. Today we are joined by Alex Putney, who is behind a really interesting website called humanresonance.org. I first came across this site while looking for information about the strange objects or artifacts found at La Mana in Ecuador, some of which are actually UV fluorescent. In other words, they actually glow in what is known as black light. Some of the artifacts included, interesting enough, a 13-step pyramid with an eye at the capstone. You probably know that symbol. Also a cobra, a snake or a Naga serpent was found. But this is just one little small aspect of the material that Alex presents on his website. On humanresonance.org, you can also find things like theories on standing waves, geometrical relationship between ancient monuments, magnetic resonance, the Earth chakra points, changing energies, 2012 levitation, Tesla, theories on the pyramids at Giza, a special water with gold and silver particles, black light. It's all connected, and these are some of the aspects that we'll be talking about. So stay with us here for an interesting discussion. Alex, welcome to Red Eyes Radio. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Heinrich, for having me. I'm really enjoying this opportunity to reach all your viewers out in the Northern Europe and all of the areas across Europe where people are tuning in. I actually just found your website myself, so it's a great discovery.
Okay, well, so Alex, I mean, I think the first thing I'd like to ask you about is a little bit in terms of your background, but also when you decided to start up your website, humanresonance.org, and how long have you been running the website now?
Well, that's an interesting question, actually. My background, I studied sculpture at Boston University, and I was introduced to this field of sacred geometry and ancient architecture and ancient artifacts through art history and studying through slide lectures in university. I went to Boston University, so they had a very good academic program and a very good traditional foundation sculpture program there. So I spent many years doing welding and wood carving, plaster casting, clay work, all kinds of things. And that really led me into a fellowship, a graduate fellowship through Brandeis University in 2001-2002 for a year-long study in Arica, Chile, to investigate artistically and study through photographs, drawings, and sculpture the Chinchorro mummies of the Atacama Desert of northern Chile and southern Peru. So that really led me down a path of discovery, because it was there that I found ancient whistles that turned out to be tuned psychoacoustically. And so my research really took off from there, which ended up in culminating in the website and my first book about 3 years later.
Mention your book. What is it called?
Well, my first book is called Phi, and that's the mathematical symbol for the constant, not pi, which is a commonly known constant of 3.14, but it's phi, which is a constant of 1.618. And that's a transcendental constant, so it continues indefinitely. And 1.618 is just the first four digits by which most people use to identify that number. So that's my first book, and that came out, excuse me, in 2006. And I've since then produced four other books, and I'm working on my sixth book right now.
There you go. So tons of material obviously out there. And again, your website is vast and has a lot of interesting things on it. Is there, let's say someone new is coming to your kind of work and your website, is there an overarching kind of theory that you would like to mention as a way of introduction to you and your work?
Sure. Well, I think the main concept, the overriding idea that I'm presenting throughout the website, has to do with the repeating images you'll find throughout that present standing waves, which are, it's a waveform that was first discovered by Nikola Tesla and identified by him in his Colorado Spring Notes of, I believe it was July 3rd, 1899, he recorded the discovery of standing waves. And I actually Read about that a lot later. I first read about standing waves in the context of research done by the Czech Technical University in Prague. And after I read their paper on standing waves and the fact that they were generating these waves in their resonators using three frequencies chosen within a Fibonacci ratio. So, for example, that would be something like 2 hertz, 3 hertz, and 5 hertz, which reflects that 1.618 ratio that I had identified earlier, and we've talked about, or you've probably talked about in previous interviews. So that's really the crux of my entrance, and I didn't actually research the context of Tesla and standing waves and their initial discovery until years later. I just really enjoyed what I had discovered in the fact that we have giant pyramids in Egypt that there are 3 of, and that they have what's similar to, not exactly, but similar to a Fibonacci ratio in their sizes as well. So as I understood standing waves and I looked at the geometric images and the geometric wave maps produced by the researchers in the Czech Tech University, I could immediately visually and geometrically in my mind transpose those images onto the cross-section of the Great Pyramid and intuitively saw that these were the answer to the age-old question is of what is the function of the pyramids. And I was able to, from that, look into the resonant frequency of the Great Pyramid itself and understand that that 765-foot wavelength of determined by the base length of the Great Pyramid actually correlated to the frequency of the human heartbeat at rest, which is 1.45 hertz. And so 1.45 hertz frequency gives that 765-foot wavelength, which defines the base length of the pyramid. So that was really the crux of my connection between looking at standing wave images and interpreting them as being geometric structures that correlate to the pyramids and as well to other sacred structures around the world.
So what does that mean to you? Does that make it clearer for you the purpose of the pyramids?
Yeah, immediately when I looked at the standing wave maps produced by the researchers, I could see that the angular inclination of the standing waves was identical to the angular inclination of the pyramid faces. And so I understood when I overlaid those images in my mind that the pyramids themselves were built to calibrate to these invisible standing wave forms. And that in the situation in the resonator that the researchers were using, the walls were creating the reflection point that was allowing standing waves to set up in that resonator. And in the case of the pyramids and the planet Earth, I realized that the opposite side of the Earth, or the antipode of the Great Pyramid in Egypt, would be the reflection point on the sphere of our planet. And so when I visualized how those sound wave formations could stand up through resonance, I understood that in the same way that the researchers were driving their oscillators using standing waves in 3 Fibonacci ratio frequencies of sound, the same thing was occurring planet-wide with the pyramids, and that the 3 pyramids at Giza were resonating the whole planet with 3 frequencies in tune with the human heartbeat.
So that's really interesting, and obviously you have some of the visual representations on your website, humanresonance.org/pyramid.html. We'll link this up as well. And you can see some of the graphs there representing these standing waves. And so do you think then that they are created themselves by the pyramid? Because I've heard that they're located on such a place on the Earth that it's like a vortex, if you will, right where they're placed. Would that mean that they could use that energy, so to speak, to resonate this energy throughout the planet? Or how do you view that, Alex?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And other researchers have been able to identify that location where the Giza plateau sits is the exact geographic center of the Earth's landmass above sea level. So by that I mean that there would be no other point on the planet where there would be more. If you took an east-west axis or a north-south axis through the site, there would be no greater landmass covered in both those directions that cross through any location on the planet. So that in itself is very fascinating, and I think that's been pointed out by many researchers and is well accepted. I think the idea of standing waves and how these geometries inform not only the angle of inclination and the structures of the pyramids themselves, their size, but also their geopositioning and their relationships with all of the rest of the pyramids and sacred sites around the world. And so really the overarching work on my website and my book is to present the concept and the GPS locations of 125 temples worldwide or sacred sites or megalithic sites and just choose, you know, the most major locations and just give a rundown and compare their position globally in relationship to Giza and the Great Pyramid in terms of miles and percent of Earth's circumference.
Mm. So what you're saying is that many of these monuments have a relationship with each other. There's a ratio, so to speak, where they're placed on the planet in accordance with the Great Pyramid then, right?
There is, exactly. And so I think it was Carl Munk is a great researcher whose books and his website Pyramid Matrix presents the mathematics behind the relationships from the pyramid, as the pyramid being the prime meridian that all the other pyramids of the world are giving their location by through their geometries. And that's a complex concept, and you really need to go to his website to hear all the details, which only he can give so beautifully. But I really went with that, with his work, and as well with the work of Jim Allison, whose work I've linked directly through my website too, that really show that this underlying mathematics and geopositioning relationships of the world's pyramids and sacred sites is unmistakable and very sharp and exact. And the one Jim Allison spent many years working on, he presents a special alignment that he calls the sine wave of sacred sites that extends along the east-west axis of the faces of the Great Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And that line, that circumferential line, passes through Angkor Wat in Cambodia, as well as Nazca and the Nazca Plain in Peru. And it turns out that both those two sites, Angkor and Nazca, are antipodal to each other. And they show a Fibonacci relationship with Giza. So, for example, the generalized Fibonacci relationship would be 2, 3, 5. Or given as a percent of Earth's circumference, it would be 20, 30, 50. And altogether, you would have 100% of a circle. So that would give you the pie chart if you looked at that circle with the circumference going through those sites. You would have a pie chart that accurately represents the locations of those three sites, Giza, Angkor, and Nazca.
Mm-hmm.
And the distances between them are not just the generalized Fibonacci distances of 20, 30, and 50, but in fact, they are actually more precise than that, and they have 3 digits of accuracy, or 4 digits of accuracy, actually, in their locations, which means that they're more accurate than the generalized Fibonacci relationship. And by percent, the distance from Giza to Angkor is 19.1, and the distance from Angkor to to Nazca is 50.0, and the distance from Nazca to Giza is 30.9%.
So very close there.
There we have a more precise Fibonacci relationship that directly reflects the Fibonacci standing waves that we've discovered on a small scale in the lab, but reflects a macro application of that the ancient Sanskrit civilization responsible for their construction had mathematically deduced.
Because there's other research out there that are pointing towards what is known as precessional numbers, even within the Angkor Wat monument. But I guess if we connect it with your ideas here in terms of the standing wave, do you think that that also means that there are places on the planet where we have yet to discover, let's say, something, a site, which at this point kind of leaves a question mark if we look at this from your point of view, where there should be a monument, if you follow my train of thought there, Alex?
Yes. And in fact, I think what we're learning from this work, it's really a global cymatics work, is we're learning the conditions, the preconditions that all the pyramids fit mathematically. And by that, and especially I think the crop circle phenomenon is one which is giving us this same kind of reiteration of locations and formulas that also fit this global code of infrasound standing waves, if you will, that emanate from the Great Pyramid as a center. I think that whole information is now re-emerging in the human consciousness, specifically because those standing waves of planetary energy are increasing. And so our awareness of them is increasing, and our awareness of our ancient use of those sacred waveforms, or what the Sanskrit culture called the Akashic Field, our ancient use of that is now being remembered, and people's past lives are really clicking in. And I think it's all because of the infrasound itself, and the planetary changes we see are literally ongoing and going to be culminating in 2012 because of energetic changes our entire solar system is experiencing because of entering a new region of the galaxy.
So that's very interesting. I've heard about mentioning of photon belts, etc., that it's an external energy that is shifting, and therefore, you know, we will have consequences obviously on this planet as well. But why would you say that they are increasing now? Is it only, you know, external, or do you think that it's a part of a, how can I put it, a bigger plan, a bigger blueprint that humanity also in one way is ready for that step right now? What do you think, Alex?
Yes, definitely. And I think right now the crystallization of the water in our bodies and the electrification of our bodies by sound waves is directly instigating this change of consciousness that we're all sharing and experiencing. And I think, yeah, it's really time for this awakening. And the Mayans themselves are still with us today as knowledge keepers who have maintained the traditions directly from the Sanskrit Atlantean past. And they have messages for us at this time that we really need to awaken to, and lifestyle changes that they steward to bring into the sacred lifestyle that they've maintained at their temples, and which has allowed the maintenance of their knowledge, because they are still and have always been in direct contact with the earth itself, which is a conscious being who communicates to them and to all of us when we choose to go barefoot and to absorb her energies. So I think definitely the ancient roots of this, as Edgar Cayce, you know, very well brought to the consciousness of the world, they're coming from karma, from Sanskrit times, that there's a reemergence right now of the Atlantean principles. And I think that really this has to do, of course, with levitation technology, which is a topic we mentioned in terms of the levitating boulders, and something we should go into more.
Yes. Yes.
I think there are so many aspects to this that it's really enticing to jump ahead, and I hope that we can keep everyone with us on the same page, even though they may not have a background and understanding the connections between these concepts yet.
Very good idea. And I do actually want to backtrack a little bit further, just to mention as well, as a kind of a preface, that we're also in contact with Carl Munk at the moment to try to get him on the program to go further into the aspects of the code. So you guys out there who are not yet kind of following that, keep an eye on our website as a kind of a follow-up, as that will detail a little bit more about the relationship between different monuments across the world, etc. But from your point of view, Alex, what does that say about that ancient culture who created these monuments? Obviously, we are talking about a culture that must in some way have been in communication with each other. Or do you think that they worked independently, if you will, in touch with a higher, you know, intelligence? They on some level were unaware and unconscious of what they were doing. What's your take on that, Alex?
I think it was both. And I think the further back you go in time, the more global communication there was, specifically through the use of the pyramids. And I do believe that the Egyptian authorities have an investment in their what they're selling. And so, of course, the Egyptologists and the Egyptian research will not ever give us a solid date for the construction of the pyramids, because a solid date can be achieved when you're trying to identify the construction, because the pyramid stones themselves are synthetic. They're not naturally sedimented limestones. They have microbubbles in them, as well as human hairs, and a density which is definitely artificial. And so all this proves that the Sanskrit mother culture of Atlantis is the origin, the origin of the pyramids can be accounted for there much further back. And I think as well the vertical rain weathering research done by, I can't remember his name,
John Boston. Anthony West and Robert Schock.
Yes, Robert Schock. Yes, another Boston University professor. That research really confirms, too, that the pyramids are far older than the Egyptian culture itself, and that the pharaohs have inherited an earlier culture. And I believe the key underlying principle of that earlier Sanskrit culture was this three-frequency resonance and the pyramid heartbeat synchronization, which is a concept I believe I was the first person to present. I'd never heard of it anywhere, the fact of or the idea of a global synchronization of heartbeat resonance. And the idea being that everyone in every temple, when the pyramids were functioning at full resonance, everyone in every temple site around the planet would be inundated with the low infrasound heartbeat booming that would synchronize everyone's biorhythms, and especially their heart and mind, into that resonance at 1.45 hertz. And that actually is called trithalamic entrainment. And that concept was discovered when heartbeat entrainment was used for the synchronization of the hemispheres of the brain for Alzheimer's patients in upstate New York. And that research really showed an amazing benefit at that frequency, and it showed the unification of the functioning of the core of the brain, the hypothalamus, pituitary, and pineal. They called that the trithalamic effect, is the unification of those three around the hypothalamus into the 1.45 hertz with synchronizing with the heartbeat itself. And so that really underlies the Native American ancient lore and other, in all indigenous cultures around the world, you hear something in relation to this idea that people who live in the indigenous lifestyle and in sacred contact and communion with the earth have the heart-mind connection is whole. And so they act as a true heart or as a one heart. Whereas those who live in dissonance with the planet and not in a sacred path or in a sacred way live with their head cut off, because their head functions as a false heart, because it's biorhythmically, it's not synchronized with the heartbeat. And so I think that concept really, I hope to present on my website and bring to the fore. And I was amazed later, I was identifying this concept because of my research into the pyramids and understanding them as a heartbeat synchronization system due to their locations and size. And I first found resonance with that concept in the works of Vladimir Magray from Russia in his books about Anastasia, or Anastasia, as Westerners would call her, who is the Siberian line holder, a very amazing knowledge from the Vedrus culture. So she goes into great detail about how they were using the Vedic culture in ancient times, the same culture that I'm speaking of when I speak of Atlantis. Her forefathers in Russia continued the tradition that they practice of synchronizing the human heartbeat by using DNA through saliva in planting seeds. And then that DNA would act as a synchronization mechanism that would create that same heartbeat resonance in the what they call the space of love, or the forest home that they create in the same way that I've been able to reveal the function of the Great Pyramid. So I believe that concept is something that really defines the new age and the new energies on Earth and the new awareness that's coming into humanity, which, you know, we can simply use the word telepathic to describe it, because it really circumvents and surpasses, transcends language and the use of verbal language.
So this is very interesting in terms of the potential synchronization then of both heart and mind, but also of a number of people. If we look at it from the ancient point of view, what do you think that the consequence of that would be if we think that a lot of minds and heart actually were in synchronization with each other? Do you look at that from a point of view that we function better as human beings, it has healing properties, or do you look at this from a point of view that we could access something else, or were we used by something, so to speak, our minds and our heart through these monuments? Or what is the consequence of some of this material here that you present here for us, Alex?
Well, the consequence is so profound that it really changes the nature of what the human being is. And I think really the Mayan initiation rites and the Mayan explanations very clearly tell us what the pyramids were designed to do. And they are the pyramid builders themselves. These are people who have maintained the knowledge of the pyramid builders and who are not human sacrificers, but, you know, that's a whole nother topic. But the whole global synchronization of heartbeats, I think that is what will happen. And the synchronization event will be the ringing of Earth's bell, which I think is the 2012 event. And we need to talk about that, I think, in a separate conversation all in itself, because it's such a complex event. But the underlying changes, I think, will be more in the high atmosphere and at these sacred sites, as well as within the human biorhythms and the human energy fields themselves, at, you know, for those people who choose to be in alignment with the sacred sites.
Sorry to cut you off, but what do you think for those who don't choose to be in alignment with that, consequences of that?
Certainly there are consequences of every choice we make. And I could go into that in detail, but I think we need to keep on track with talking about the potential for how we can activate ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because I think we all really know very well what happens when we do not. And I think, you know, the environment that cell phones create, for example, and cell phone towers create around us promotes microbial growth and fungal growth. And it's been shown, I think, that cancer is simply a fungus. Mm-hmm. And that the acoustic environment within the human body is really the reflection of the higher awareness of a human being. For example, monks and gurus tend to be loners or be in the forest or on, you know, within stone structures barefoot, because their higher self is choosing to be in a higher resonance environment. And so I think really the interchanges going on in the human heart and the human consciousness and within human telepathic ability really lead us away from these mechanized, confused technologies that were literally ripped out of Tesla's lab and taken and forced down people's throats before his research could be completed and applied, you know, thoughtfully.
Yeah.
And so what we have is literally this rewiring of the energies around us, because we're trying to run AC currents everywhere instead of using wireless technology in the Earth resonance frequencies, as Tesla had discovered to be most effective. And that's where telepathy steps in. So I think, you know, the key here is understanding that not only are there the benefits of prayer and of crystallization of the water and everything that Masaru Emoto talks about, But there's a deeper level of DNA and DNA conformation, which we need to get into to really address the changes that happen holistically in the body, because DNA is really at the core of human emotional content. Mm-hmm. And human spiritual growth is obviously linked to emotion, and our ability to meditate and be at peace with ourselves and with the world is directly tied into how we perceive the world and how we interact with it through our DNA and through literally the acoustic and electric interaction that we have. So that concept, I think, is something that we really need to bring to the fore, and I'm just going to, you know, throw it out there right now.
Cool.
The conformation of DNA is really something that everyone has missed, and I think is huge, because research shows that when participants in studies were shown videos of peaceful scenes, meditative scenes, and then immediately shown video of violent scenes or anger or, fear, those emotional states showed in their DNA a direct winding of the DNA helix and a direct simultaneous decrease in the conductivity of DNA and the ability of DNA to receive and transmit energy from its environment and to other cells. So these changes happen immediately, the researchers found, and this is actually U.S. military research, which is why we don't hear about it, done by INSCOM and promoted by Greg Braden, which was the source that I first heard about this. But essentially, INSCOM was able to show that the electrical state and the state of mind of a person, the conductivity increased dramatically, and as in a state of peace or meditation, as the DNA unwound into a perfectly straight ladder, or, you know, it would curve, I imagine, but there would be no twisting of the DNA strand. And so in real time, they were able to record how, as someone tensed up with fear at seeing a change in the video screen images towards violence, their DNA would immediately wind up. So the idea of being unwound or being wound up directly has to do with what's going on in every cell of our body within our DNA in real time with our emotions.
See, I just want to, it's so obvious at this point, but again, we can also understand why we are so inundated with the violence, you know, on the TV and on the media, and why they chose to give us that, so to speak. And also this connects with the wireless systems around us and the cell phone radiation. It's like we're being, as these natural energies that you're talking about, Alex, are probably heading towards Earth, or we're being part of that, we're also slowly, if you will, being cut off from those energies the more we focus on the things that goes on in the media, or even being in a city where wireless and cell phone radiation is very prominent. Would you agree with that, Alex?
Definitely. Definitely. And I think that a lot of the brilliance of someone like Anastasia in Siberia has to do with her ability to live in a purest human state, where the water she drinks, the air she breathes, the sound impacting her body, her biorhythms are all aligned with that through her ancient practices and her cultural knowledge. And I think that that's the example. And Edgar Cayce really said it in one of his predictions, that the hope of the world would come through Russia. And I hope to follow her amazing lead and present the science behind the concepts that, you know, heartbeat resonance and heartbeat synchronization is the direct way to not only telepathy, but a whole different experience of the world, which has been defined scientifically as synesthesia, which is something that I experience and is a complex topic to get into, but I think worth getting into, because I believe these are the conditions that the pyramids engender when people develop spiritually within them, or when gestation occurs within the pharaoh's infants. I think all of these situations really lead to synesthesia, and that and a great example of that might be Daniel Tammet, who's now turning heads in England for his amazing mathematical abilities, as well as his ability to express what goes on in his synesthetic experience of numbers and the higher mathematical realms, really.
Is there something more? Sorry, say the name again of the person, Daniel.
Daniel Tammet. T-A-M-M-E-T.
Can you also mention something briefly about him?
Yeah, I've written about him in my second book, Tesla's Rebirth, which goes into some of my reincarnation realizations. But Daniel Tammet is really an amazing guy. People have known him as Pi Man because he recited over 250,000 digits of pi over 5 hours in recitation by memory. So he's someone who experiences numbers in a more complex way than I do, but certainly my experience of mathematics reflects what he describes as well, which is a kind of illumination of light in our perception and in our emotional experience of images and thoughts that we're having that seem to provide information, critical information about the environment or about what's being sought. You know, for example, people channel information, and it seems like Daniel Tammet and the whole ability with synesthesia is to be able to immediately receive. For example, people say Daniel Tammet does not do math in his head. He simply channels the answer.
Sure.
In effect.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like a meta function or a higher function of the human consciousness that manifests through a luminous field that's experienced around the body in color and light. And I would like to say as well, in my experience of it, Daniel Tammet does not mention this much, although he was diagnosed with autism when he was young. Mm. And the whole shaking and rhythmic rocking back and forth or banging of the head that autistic children demonstrate, I believe, has to do with reinforcing that heartbeat that they're missing from their environment. And that's exactly what they have in the womb. The fetus is inverted in the womb with the root chakra of the infant right underneath the mother's heart. And so the heartbeat is literally resonating and synchronizing the biorhythms of the mother and child in the womb, exactly as the pyramids were designed to do with two people on opposite sides of the planet. So this concept right there really comes from the deep knowledge of the mother culture, the kind of maternal culture or matriarchal culture of this Sanskrit society. And, you know, I believe that's something that Tesla had really tuned into in his research. And I think that, you know, the indigenous cultures of the world right now are recognizing this shift of power towards the matriarchal leadership. And so I'm really excited about that as well. But I think this whole shift that we're looking at has to do with synesthesia and the synesthetic experience shared globally by people who can communicate through a holographic field. Mm. And in that way transcends the obstacles that that human beings obviously on this planet must overcome if we want to survive, things like the oil spill and whatever else that these money-hungry people can come up with for us.
Do you think that this was the mind of the ancient man and woman a little bit more, that they had this interconnectedness to begin with? Hence, they had the ability to build and create some of these monuments. Because one fascinating aspect of this that you mentioned to me is, does this mean that we consciously master this technique, or is this something that goes on in the case of Daniel here, Tammet, then he has it as a form of, it's an unconscious process, if you will. It's just happening to him. I'd reckon that it's not a talent, so to speak, that he's learning to have developed, but it's just actually a side effect of something, or it's just happening to him? And would you suspect that that's the same thing that would happen to a lot of people on the planet then as well, if we go through this change?
Yes, I think that's exactly what is happening with us right now. And that my experience mirrors his and many other people who are perhaps more barefoot or more in tune to be at certain hotspots where this acoustic energy is focused. And I think the cause of this would be, in Daniel's case, the fact that he lives at the same distance from the Great Pyramid as Stonehenge, which is at 9.0% of the Earth's circumference from Giza. So that distance of 9% is, points to the fact that there is all this infrasound waves being focused on his area, and that he is one of the many people in that area who are really transducing those energies within their bodies into and having it reflect an alteration in their DNA that is underlying their new, inner communication that's going on. And I have that inner communication as well. And I know there are networks of people around the world who are more advanced in that inner communication than I am even. And they're communicating with each other, telepathically in ways that I'm not yet able to do consciously. Most of my communications are through deep meditations and through conscious thought and searching, whereby I have inspirational moments that I believe are certainly influenced by my higher self and other energies I'm looking to communicate with.
I want to talk more about that as well. But again, what you're saying is that just by close proximity to some of these monuments, or if we're in the right ratio from them, there can be certain benefits, so to speak, because of this then.
Yes. And I would say all of the research goes to show that the quality of the water in your body really dictates your body's ability to assimilate that energy, as well as the quality of the emotion in your heart and the emotion in your energy field. So, for example, there's extensive research now in crop circles where there's such a high energy of the new dimensional forces of infrasound in that space that crop circles are almost like an example of how these hotspots will be for miles around in the future.
Yeah.
And in the crop circles right now, when you go in, for example, some people, they notice their cell phones draining the batteries out immediately, or they don't work, and then immediately they'll walk outside the circle and they do work. And the same thing, Geiger counters give readings like this. All these energies have been recorded by people who are fascinated by the experience, but more so they, within themselves emotionally, if someone's frustrated or angry, they can literally make themselves nauseous if they've, got a chemical imbalance in their body that's causing emotional imbalances, that will manifest more clearly in the crop circle. And I think that that is due to the fact that there's more energy there, and it's literally lowering the permeability of the body so that any chemicals in the body are able to penetrate more deeply, and there's more communication and more movement going on within the body because of all that energy. So, for example, one of the things that we haven't addressed yet that I think is really important to talk about before we finish up in terms of the energized water and the crystallization water concept has to do with the water found in La Mana, Ecuador, the site that we had mentioned has the UV fluorescent artifacts. That water has been extensively studied for its intense energies, as well as the crystallization has been photographed through polarized light and the same techniques used by Masaru Emoto. And those photographs are remarkable, and I published them on my website and in my book, Phi. They present a full spectral array where all the colors of light, like in a prism, are divided spectrally, as well as really beautiful crystallization, just a remarkable energies. And all measurements, when compared with other waters, have been in millions of times, not just thousands, but millions of times greater than most water, city water or anything like that. And this site in La Mana literally has the effect of transmuting the human body into a vehicle for higher energies to move through. And I believe that that's what's happened in the case of people like Daniel Tammet as well environmentally. And their own thoughts and emotions directly affects the quality of the water and the crystallization of the water in their body, which allows higher energy states to be achieved. So there's, you know, certainly a question as to what you're putting in your body physically with the water you're drinking, but as well what you're putting in your body energetically with the feelings that you're engendering inside and the environment and the emotions that you're sharing with others.
Yes. And this water also that you talk about, didn't they contain a certain amount of gold and silver particles as well?
Exactly. That's one of the fascinating findings, is that there are trace amounts of nanoparticles of gold and silver. And on the water page on my website, I go into detail about how that exact particle size found in those waters, which is from 2 to 10 nanometers in size, those particle size were the exact size defined by researchers studying the efficacy of silver nanoparticles against viruses. So that particle size specifically has the right size to bond with the sulfur-bearing nodes on viruses which attack cells. So for example, HIV, I've got photos on my website, dark field images actually, of HIV with being attacked by silver of that particle size of 2 to 10 nanometers, which effectively kill it. And they do that by two processes, not only by conducting electricity through the nanoparticles, which strip the enzyme coatings of the virus, but also they stick to the sulfur that the virus is used to attach to host cells. And the sulfur binding protein in the the silver itself binds and blocks the protein knobs from having
connecting
their,
with the, our body. Yeah,
exactly, from having their effect. So they are starved essentially by the silver and killed electrically as well.
Well, that's interesting, because I know a while back there was talk about that too. They talked about cancer growths and things like that they could starve them of nutrition, but the problem was that they did that and one died off, a new one went up. It's a bit of a complex problem, but I guess what you're saying here as well is that this is the potentially obviously a cure for these things. And this water as well that you mentioned, this was found then naturally, right? It's a spring water in this region of La Mana in Ecuador, right?
It is coming out of the mountain, but I would hesitate to use the word natural, because my research shows that the distance and the location of this site in La Mana, as well as a site called Tlacote in Mexico, which is the only other site on Earth that I've been able to discover thus far where gold water flows on the surface, gold nanoparticles are contained in the waters. Those two sites are mathematically showing the Fibonacci ratio with the pyramid exactly. So I would say, you know, at a distance of 30% and 30.9% of the Earth's circumference. So I would say that the exact geoposition and the fact that the artifacts themselves describe the geoposition and through the UV luminescence effect describe how that water can be used to produce black light by HHO plasma. That's another concept we need to get into altogether, more complicated than the average person really has a grasp of right now. But water itself and the high energy states of water have been rediscovered by a company called blacklightpower.com. Dr. Randall Mills has been able to really concisely define what's happening in the high energy states of water. And that's really important information, I think, for everyone to understand as we think about these ideas of 2012 and the new energies coming onto the planet, and as well the effect of the energization or the, you know, the activation of the energies in the pyramids. And I think maybe that would be great time for a quote from the Mayans, who directly talk about the purpose of the pyramids and, you know, what activation their ceremonies and in their initiations are affecting in the people who enjoy them.
Do you have that quote there?
Yeah, I'll pull it up right here. It's on my site at humanresonance.org/activation.html. And this is written by Hunbats Men, who's an Itza Mayan elder from the Itza tradition. And, you know, he gives us very profound, invitation, really, to experience, you know, in the body the things that I understand intellectually at this point, but I'm really looking forward to understanding physically in the pyramids myself. Mm-hmm. Okay. Through this initiation, they will be able to see the luminosity of the Great Spirit. When this spiritual initiation is completed in the house of Hunab-Ku in heaven, the spirit of each initiate will be illumined. Then it will return to earth to awaken the body and take it to the pyramids. Chichen Itza, Uxmal, Ka'aba, Etzna, Palenque, all of these sacred Mayan centers have a specific function in every part of the body to awaken the seven powers contained in it. Only through the solar initiation can the sleeping body of mankind be awakened. The reincarnated teachers of the New Age of Aquarius implore for the sacred human race to awaken, so that in this way it can fulfill its sacred destiny, which is to be the true sons and daughters of the cosmic light. The time of knowledge approaches. The light in the center of the pyramidal house of Hunab-Ku will flash like lightning that will pierce through the shadows that envelop the human race. Let us prepare to receive the light of knowledge that comes from Hunab-Ku and transcend into the memory of the Creator and become beings of eternal luminosity.
I'm actually reminded of I stumbled over a video here not too long ago. It was an analysis of a photograph taken at one of the pyramids. I think it was at Kukulcan or something like that, where allegedly there was a beam of light coming straight up from the pyramid. Don't know if you saw that, Alex.
I'm not sure. I remember one that Hunbats may have been presenting that had a line of what they were interpreting as hieroglyphic text, but I'm not too sure if that's the same one. Mm.
All right. Well, we can link that up in terms of that little light phenomena that was seen over the pyramid. That's really interesting. And is there anything else you can say about that quote you read from the Hunbats men there?
Well, I think it's really beautiful because they give us really profound statements, which are echoed in the Egyptian pyramid texts themselves, which are inscribed on some of the pyramids in Saqqara. And I think we should read from those texts as well, because the implications are so profound and the science is now there to support what's being suggested in these texts. And I'd like to get to read that quote and then get into the science and the physics of it, because I believe all of the light that they're talking about in terms of the interior chambers of the pyramids and this light of heaven is actually HHO plasma, and that human beings are energized by colloidal gold and silver Ayurvedic waters used at the pyramid sites to be able to enter into these plasmas, into these energy chambers, and literally kindle themselves into becoming beings of eternal luminosity, exactly as described by Hunbats.
Alex, what I would like to do here is take a little short break here and then obviously continue with more here in our member section. But I do want you to mention your website and also give out some of your book titles again. What would you recommend in terms of your books for someone who's coming to some of these topics for the first time and want to dive into it, as it were?
Okay, that would be great. It's really difficult, I think, to skip ahead to some of my later books, because my first book is really my most important work, and I think if you don't have that book, the other books I've written will not be as coherent. So I would really suggest for anyone interested to visit the buy page and the products at my website. The first book I produced is the most important product, called Phi, and it has a beautiful green and blue cover with the planetary geometry on the front and peacock feathers. And that book, I think, is one of the more expensive books I've produced, but it's certainly the largest and has the most profound and overriding concepts that I'd like to present. And from there, I think it makes sense to proceed to the other books I've written. And, you know, my second book, Tesla's Rebirth, is probably tough for a lot of people to take, because I open up a can of worms that a lot of people are really fighting to understand in terms of global conspiracy. Mm. And so what I've done with that research is really divide my second book, Tesla's Rebirth, contains the positive aspects of Tesla's work and teaching and everything that we can bring today and move forward with conceptually in terms of bioelectrification, which was one of Tesla's greatest interests in his later years. He had the Tesla Electrotherapy Company. But the healing and the biorhythmic therapy that stems from Tesla work is really focused in my first book. And the first book of my Tesla books. But the third book I produced, called The Veil of Invisibility, contains all of the conspiracy theory information, all of the scientific information that supports the understanding presented by Otto Skorzeny and transmitted through the book The Bush Connection, which deals with the direct Nazi connection between Tesla's administrative assistant, George Scherf, and his son, George Scherf Jr., who in fact Otto Skorzeny revealed to be Nazi spies, and in fact revealed the identity of George Scherf Jr. as actually being Nazi spy, a child spy in Tesla's lab, who after Tesla's assassination became known as, and used the alias George Herbert Walker Bush. And the connection there, which is really fascinating as well, has to do with the understanding Otto Skorzeny gave that Prescott Bush was in fact a secondary alias for George Scherf Sr., who was Tesla's assistant, who pretty much disappeared. His identity did not exist after Tesla was assassinated. So that's a fascinating read, but something that I really think is completely secondary, and I hope that people will choose to absorb Phi and the more positive aspects I have to talk about before they try to understand the context that's important to in reading a book like The Veil of Invisibility or The Bush Connection by Eric Orion.
Right, really good. Again, the website humanresonance.org. Click on the buy button and see if there's something there you like, because it's tons of interesting stuff there for you. And obviously, we have loads to talk about here in our members section, Alex. I want to ask you more about HHO Plasma. I want to talk a little bit more about the casing stones actually on the pyramids, and much more, obviously. But stay with us, Alex, and we'll be back here in a while with more.
Love, love is a verb. Love is a doom. Feathers on my breath. Gentle dimples shine, shakes me, makes me lie. Feathers on my breath. Teardrop on the fire. Feathers on my breath.
with us as we talk more with Alex in Hour 2 for our members about grounding of the human body, illumination, how to light up or enlighten your DNA, and the special water with gold and silver particles. We discuss the true versus the false or the corrupt Illuminati. We discuss the casing stones to the pyramids, how those were put together, what their properties are. We talk about the flood and water from Mars. Changing energies are affecting the planet. There's anomalies taking place around the world in accordance to the standing wave ratio that Alex have mapped and that we've talked about. We have things like unexplained fires, levitating stones, and even strange animals that might mean changes in DNA. We talk about the purpose of the pyramid, fire, light, and their function. We do get into 2012 as well. We get Alex's take on this. We discuss magnetic reversal and Betelgeuse. This star has shockingly been shrinking more than 15% since 1993. Is it going to go supernova in 2012? Will the effects of this potential dying star actually reach us at this critical moment? Don't miss Hour 2 with Alex Putney. Click on Members to log in and download, or click on Subscribe to sign up if you want to hear more. Go to our website and read all about signing up for a subscription. It's right there. Okay, but we'll see you on the other side of this break. Do stay with us.